And you're listening to Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Welcome to the second part of our interview with Zibo Zimavavi, General Secretary of the South African Federation of Trade Unions. South Africa in crisis, race and the class struggle in South Africa. The South African Federation of Trade Unions, SAFTU, is the voice of the workers in the struggle for a socialist society. It was formed by the Metal Workers Union, the largest union in South Africa, and numerous other unions as an alternative to the Coalition of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, which defended the South African government's role in the Marikana massacre of 34 striking miners in August 2012. Cyril Ramaphosa, who is currently the president of South Africa, was a member of the board of the Loneman Company, which owned the Marikana mines. We asked SAFTU General Secretary Zwelinzima Mbabane about the history of the South African freedom struggle, which overthrew the apartheid government, but left in place the capitalist economic system, continued exploitation of the working class, and economic inequality, whose corruption have intensified under the successors to President Mandela. Under the current Ramaphosa administration, new developments are reaching a crisis, with mass unemployment, heightened inequality, and new proposals restricting the rights of unions and so-called reforms for the minimum wages. Protests by youth and workers are growing, which led to the general strike this past April. To analyze these issues of race and class struggle in South Africa, we welcome our guest Zibo Zimavavi, General Secretary of SAFTU, South African Federation of Trade Unions.
Winnie Mandela kind of admonished or instructed in the months before she passed away that while the racialist state had been dismantled as a component part of capitalism, that the second process of really establishing a democracy by virtue of having economic distribution equality, equality of wealth, had not been accomplished, and seemed very much to be pushing towards, which I think was part of her mainstay for many years, socialism. The South African trade union movement has been much, much more militant and immersed in the lives of the people here in South Africa on all levels than has the trade union movement for the most part here. I'm wondering if you see as part of the struggles, as a strategic, instrumental part of the struggle of the South African trade union movement, strong unions, for example, like the 350,000 workers that are in the Metal Workers Union and so on. Is it about a struggle for socialism? Is it about some stage of socialism now that becomes the formidable activity of people in the progressive sector who came out of the anti-apartheid struggle? Is this the 21st century struggle for economic revolution or dismantling of the capitalist processes?
Let me answer your question by trying to analyze the political mood in South Africa today. Black people are feeling betrayed. There is a anger that is at unprecedented levels. The youth of our country is in particular facing the wrath of the failed economic programs, of the failed affirmative action policies, of the failed economic transformation, of the anger against the fact that the ruling elites that were the main beneficiaries of the apartheid era have lost absolutely nothing. They still occupy the land, they still occupy and own the mines, they still own the leading heights of the economy, the big industrial firm. And people are teething with anger. That bursting anger is what you see in the streets in South Africa. South Africa is the world capital of protest action. there are 13 to 14,000 service delivery protest actions across the length and the breadth of that country every year, according to the police reports. In the past, the police were saying 5% of all of those protest actions turned violent. But in the recent report, they're saying 94% of those service delivery protests turned violent. Now, I'm trying to capture to you the mood of the country, the mood of women, the mood of youth who are on the receiving end of what most South Africans now agree to have been a failed attempt to give dignity to black people. In that context, Winnie Mandela has become a symbol of resistance against the current status quo, because she not only was a symbol of resistance during the 27 years of the incarceration of her husband, Nelson Mandela, but post-1994, she's one of the few in the ANC who have pointed out the fault lines of the democratic order, in bracket commas. She's the one who recognized that we, as the country, have largely obtained political rights without economic rights, that the black people have only become the face of unemployment, poverty, inequalities, and crime, victims of crime, of gang warfares in the townships, and of failing education system, of a failing health care, of landlessness, of propertyless. She have raised in each and every opportunity the need for the whole country to embrace what they eventually called the second phase of a radical economic transformation, to give a total meaning to our freedom and to our democracy. The youth is looking for new heroes, and there is a strong sentiment growing that the likes of those, the likes of Nelson Mandela and his generation that negotiated the end of apartheid sold out, in particular in relation to what matters most, the economic rights of the majority, the black people. And it is in that context that the youth is in search of new heroes. And Winnie Mandela is that hero. Steve Biko is that hero. Robert Sobukwe is that hero. Chris Hani is that hero. People are in search of symbols of resistance to the status quo. And that's why if you look at the strike that we held in 25th of April against the national minimum wage and this assault on the right to strike, we drew unbelievable numbers of people in the streets, and we felt that the people were not just speaking against the national minimum wage of 20 rand an hour, but they were speaking against the overall economic situation that have found them in the bottom chain of development in the country. So yes, people are in search of alternative to the status quo, and people are recognizing that the capitalist system doesn't have a solution to the crisis of humankind. People are beginning to look at experiences of socialization and socialist transformation elsewhere in the world, and that's why people are looking at what is happening and what had happened in Cuba and why Cuba is ranked amongst the best providers of healthcare and education, and why it is rather a more egalitarian society in the context of the world's largest inequalities in South Africa itself.
Are there forces within COSATU which are leaving COSATU? What's happening within COSATU? What's happening within the ANC? Are you drawing converts from those groups?
We have struck a chord with black workers in the country. I'll share with you in your WhatsApp group the types of crowds that we draw on the 25th of April. We are the only talk of town when it comes to defense of workers' rights and raising up a flag for a need of a new struggle for a total emancipation of our people, in particular at the economic level. We have drawn a number of unions out of COSATU. I was the general secretary of COSATU myself for 14 years. And I was dismissed together with the biggest and the most militant democratic trade union in the country, the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, NUMSA, which was dismissed with 360,000 members for their questioning the relevance of the tripartite alliance of a specialized relationship between COSATU as the trade union, the ANC, the Prime Liberation Organization, which is now the governing party, as well as what was called the largest South African Communist Party, the South African Communist Party. And when people started to question the relevance of that alliance in the context of the worsening unemployment, poverty, and worsening material conditions of the working people in our country, the response of the majority in the ANC, COSATU and SACP, was to basically dismantle the unity of workers. And that's where the origins of SAFTU can be traced to. We felt that the basic lesson we must learn from these many years of tying workers into the strings of the ANC was that a trade union movement that is not totally independent from employers and from political parties can never serve the interest of the working people. Not at all. And we've learned that through a bitter experience whilst we were leading COSATU and hoping that every new leader is going to reverse the neoliberal programs that were championed from 1996. We didn't fail. Instead, COSATU was one of those very few organizations together with this ANC partner who justified the killing of 34 mine workers in Marikana, and people who see very little wrong outside mouthing but do absolutely nothing about the deteriorating material conditions of the working class. COSATU is the sorry shadow of its former self. And this was one of the most exciting trade union movement in the world that combined capacity to engage technically on a range of issues, be it environment or the economic industrialization, all manner of things, to movement that could combine that technical capacity in the boardroom with an ability to mobilize not only its own members, but broader layers of the working class. COSATU have lost all of that capacity, and it is now facing a very bleak future, and it will come as no surprise that in the next 5 to 10 years, it is wiped out of the face of earth through its own inability to read the mood and to extricate itself from the strings of the ANC. That's on COSATU. The ANC was an organization regarded by many as a left-leaning, working-class biased liberation movement. Frankly, the ANC lost that when it adopted the orthodox pro-market neoliberal programs, started with privatization of the basic services in 1995, a year after it had ascended to power, and then sealed that through the macroeconomic policies, in particular fiscal and monetary policies that cemented the position of dominance and power of the multinational corporations over the people of our country. So the ANC is now a typical neoliberal conservative organization launching endless attacks on the living standards of the workers and the poor through its commitment to the pro-rich and the pro-market policies.
My work in this country is as an anti-poverty lawyer, and I thought I had some sense of the level of poverty. And then I was in South Africa, and I was in places like Khayelitsha, and the level of impoverishment was staggering and overwhelming. And I certainly like to believe that from 1994 forward, that there has been some fundamental change in places like Khayelitsha, or for that matter, Fontainebleau, which is a wine-growing country where people were virtually serfs on the land, their historic land. Has there been, notwithstanding the political conditions and circumstances that you've described any measurable improvement in the living conditions, or would you say that fundamentally, aside from the integration of blacks into the capitalist structure to some degree, the same apartheid figures that controlled it then have integrated in people of color, are the conditions fundamentally the same? Is it now become the reality that the struggle is first and foremost not so much a reform struggle, but a struggle for economic overhaul of the system?
Only an insane person can make a claim that 1994 have not seen some benefits accruing even to black people. There has been some benefits. But then when it comes to the realities of the economic power, the distribution of wealth, who owns what, things have actually deteriorated. Let me quote you examples. When it comes to poverty, according to government statisticians general who issued a report making a tracing of poverty, makes this very staggering and sobering assessment. He says, whereas in 2011 was just deep into democracy, there were 27 million people at that time out of about 52, 53 million South Africans who were living in poverty. And he says that 27 million represented around 52% of the population living in poverty. He says by 2015, the numbers of people living in poverty had grown from that 27 million to 30.4 million out of the 55 million population. And he says that represent a 55% of the population. And the measure of that poverty, he says, is based on the upper bound of a 974 rands a month, meaning that a 974 rands is a poverty measure. And the 974, you divide by the exchange rate of 1:12 when you compare the rand and the US dollar. 55% of the population lives below a 974 rands a month. Now that's staggering. And any freedom that can address the meat section of a human's body, which is the stomach, is not worth celebrating. That's the first measure. The second measure is that we have now become the most unequal society in the world. Before 1994, we had a competition of some kind between South Africa, Namibia, the Central African Republic, in the African continent, Brazil, Argentina, and other South American nations, and with Malaysia and Philippines and other countries like that in East Asia. We were competing with them. We have become now the most unequal society with a Gini coefficient rate of 0:68. That's incredible. As we speak in our country, 3 multi-billionaires have the wealth that is equal to 42% of the wealth of the citizens. 3. As we speak, 10% of the top rich people have assets that amounts to 94% of what is owned by the population. Not even in America will you have such levels of inequalities. And I know that here is a huge disparity still between black and white and between urban and rural, between men and women. But you will not hear such staggering figures as you hear in South Africa. South Africa is basically two nations in one. The rates of unemployment has become worse than they were during the apartheid era. Again, according to statistics, South Africa, we have slowly progressed to an unemployment rate that was always just above 20% to a staggering 27% if you use the narrow definition of unemployment, meaning that you count only the workers who are actively searching for employment opportunities. That gives you 27% unemployment rate in our country today. It has increased, in fact, during the Ramaphosa era. Secondly, if you use the broader definition of unemployment, which the progressive movement uses, meaning that you count all of those that have given up searching for employment opportunities and as being unemployed, you're now talking about 36%. Amongst black people, it's around 40%. Amongst women, it's around 40%. But the devastating statistics is about youth unemployment. The rate of unemployment of our youth between 25 and 15 years is 63%. And we're talking not people who are at school. We're talking about people who should be at school, who are not in school, who are counted officially as unemployed. The rate of overall youth unemployment is sitting at 45%. And that's why I said many years ago that in South Africa, we're actually sitting on a ticking time bomb that can explode any day. In fact, the signs of that ticking time bomb are out there. If you go to Johannesburg, I usually say it's a city surrounded by a ring of fire out of the countless demonstrations against so-called service delivery, which is basically the working class feeling the squeeze of a failed democracy and a failed economy, and which are now in desperation to raise their voice and to sometimes use orthodox means to try and get heard, banning things and in order to attract the attention of the government. That wouldn't listen to them if they were not banning things.
The question now becomes, many of us who were involved in the anti-apartheid struggle in terms of the role of the U.S. support of the South African government, and many of us who look to the continent of Africa and the national liberation struggles there. Where are we now with a message of resistance? What is the stage of the struggle of groups like SAFTU at this point? And most strategically in that, the responsibility of your comrades stateside in the U.S. to support the struggles. What is the message also to those of us who look to the South African people, to look to the African continent to build relations, alliances, and to assist our comrades there? And certainly this would be true for people who support a Pan-Africanist sensitivity, which many of us who are white do as well.
A new struggle has been launched in South Africa. A new struggle for economic emancipation. A new struggle for the return of the land. A new struggle against the corporate greed and domination of all aspects of our people's lives by multinational corporations who are all over the country in search of greater levels of exploitation of the working people and ever increasing lust for profits at the expense of everything. A new struggle against the destruction of the environment. A new struggle for an economy that is responsive to the needs of the people. It's a local struggle, but it is also a global struggle. It's a global struggle in that the same struggles that we're waging in South Africa are the struggles that we must wage here in the United States against corporate greed and the domination of the people's lives by unaccountable 1% that owns everything and owns everything that moves in the world. And that's the new struggle. And that struggle is a struggle that will require solidarity even greater than the solidarity we received during the apartheid era. It's no longer a solidarity with South Africa. Yes, it is solidarity with South Africa, just like it is solidarity with the rest of the African continent. It is solidarity between workers of the world, whether they are in the north or south, recognizing the differences between the dynamics that are different in the south and north, because we all know that we are at different stages of development. It's the need to unite the trade union movement and the rest of the civil society to take up issues of environmental degradation, to take up issues of poverty inequalities, to take up the issues of women's rights, and to fight for a total emancipation of the girl child from the beginning up to the end, to link up with environmental activists, and to fight against the global destruction of the Mother Earth. It's a struggle that must unite civil society formations across the globe in demand and united by only one slogan, that another world is possible.
We thank you. We will work as we must to build support as our brothers and sisters in South Africa continue to take the lead as they have.
Thank you very much for the interview.
And our special guest has been Zewel Zimababe, General Secretary of SAFTU, the South African Federation of Trade Unions. For part one of this interview, go to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org. And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.